This is a Main Hustle Media podcast.
Hello and welcome to the show. My name is Jackie O and you're listening to Militantly Mixed.
Yo, this is Rashani from the Single Simulcast. And when I'm not making you laugh or making up parody songs, I'm kicking back, listening to Militantly Mixed.
I would like to acknowledge that the Main Hustle Media podcasts are recorded on the traditional lands of the Karankawa, the Chumash, and the Tongva people, and I wish to pay my respects to the people of those nations, both past and present.
Hey, y'all, welcome to Militantly Mixed, the podcast about race and identity from the mixed race perspective. I am your host, Charmaine Fury, a.k.a. DeBlasian Blurred, the busiest mixed race, bi-gender, bisexual, polyamorous, atheist, comic book nerd, cat mom, and two-time Asian American Podcasters Association's Golden Crane Award-winning podcaster in this podcasting game. This is episode 172. And it is the last episode of Asian American Pacific Islander Heritage Month, which I know I haven't been addressing on the show this month, despite kind of having a super Asian month myself. I've talked about it before. I run hot and cold with these heritage months, and part of it is because I really feel like it's a pass for white supremacy to be like, we're not racist, we gave you a month. That being said, I enjoy these opportunities for us to celebrate our heritages and share it with other people. And even for those of us, for mixed folks, for us, that we get a chance to show how we maneuver through various cultures through our mixedness. You know, I always say that because I'm hierarchically black first and then Japanese in terms of my access to culture and the people that I grew up around, I maneuver Asian spaces as a black Asian. I don't maneuver Asian spaces as an Asian person, a solely Asian person. I don't know if the reverse of that is as true. I do feel more welcome, I guess, in blackness. And so I maneuver as a black person who happens to be mixed, I think. Whereas in Asian spaces, I'm a black Asian. I can tell that feeling's very real. But anyways, I'm digressing. My guest today does so happen to be a mixed Asian too. And last week I did the Blasian March and the Black Asian Solidarity panel discussion at the steps of the East West Players Theater. I was also featured in an article about the 1992 uprisings, LA uprisings, in which, part of my story was shared as context for the LA uprisings, written by Shangxiao Yu, a.k.a. Soleil. I had a link in the show notes last week for that. I'll put a link in the show notes for that article again today because it was a dope article. And if you don't know that much about the 1992 LA uprisings, I would recommend it because she gives a lot of context for like what led up to it. And then there's, of course, my personal story. There's a personal story from I think it was a Korean-American journalist who was covering it during that time. Talked a lot about the Black Asian solidarity that was missing from the news during that time. It's a really great article, so I encourage y'all to read it. And also, shout out to Soleil, because she's dope as hell. I got to meet her in person last week, too, and I adore her. What else? Oh, speaking of last week during the... Wow, this is going to be an excellent intro, Charmaine. Last week, we did the Militantly Mixed live panel discussion with Rohan Jolie, Asian Soph, and Lee Painter Kim, in which we talked about the Black Asian Solidarity Movement and the work that the four of us do together and separately, which is still available on YouTube if you want to watch it. But also, last week's episode was the audio that I used. And I know that the audio is tough on both of those, but I'm glad we were able to capture it at all. Hopefully, I can put enough funds together to get stronger live streaming equipment for the future. But shout out again to East West Players Theater for providing us that free space, providing us that audio equipment, and also the volunteers. Shout out to Kevin and Courtney for operating everything, setting everything up, breaking everything down, and supporting us during that panel. it was it's such a big deal to me that I got to do an event for Militantly Mixed at East West Players Theater, and I hope that that's just one of many to come. I hope that that's something that I'm able to do again in the future and maybe actually end up on the stage at some point there. Because it's such a beautiful space, and I love that we got to use the courtyard for the event. So in honor of that and in honor of them, I would like to try to raise some funds as a thank you for what they did for us. So I've been putting it's on the Instagram where you can actually donate through Instagram. I also have the Militantly Mixed PayPal and the Main Hustle Media Venmo. So if you would like to help me throw some coins in their direction for what they gave us and providing us that space and the audio equipment and the person to operate the audio equipment, that shit's not cheap. So I appreciate that they provided that, donated that to us. You can go to paypal.me/militantlymixed and put some coins in that tip jar. You can put EWP or Blasian March or something like that in there, and I'll know what to do with it. And then also I have a Main Hustle Media Venmo account. That's M-A-N-E, like my name, Main Hustle Media. So if you drop some coins in there, I will also send that way. So what my plan is to, anything that I raise between then and June 15th, I was going to divide up between East West Players and the Blasian March. But if I get to the June 15th and I don't feel like I've raised anything, then I'll probably push it for a little bit longer or make a new t-shirts or something like that. I at some point I would like to give back to them for what they gave us. And then of course, being a part of the Blasian March actions that took place on Saturday in LA, it's just a part of, a new phase, I guess, in or a new place for me to feel my full and complete mixed-ass self in an activism space to be a part of Blasian March. And I'm so grateful to have been able to participate in the LA actions. I hope one day to also participate in the New York actions as well. And then shit, maybe one day I'll bring it to Houston if I have the capacity. but I would like to support both of those organizations for everything that we did last week. So if you'd like to support us, again, paypal.me/militantlymix or Venmo at Main Hustle Media. And I want to address this, but I also am not in a head and heart space to really get into it without like full on crying or full on ranting. And I don't want to detract from the dopeness of today's episode because I had a really fun time with my guest and it's happy and he's happy and we had a fun time. So I want to be able to give everything to this episode for my guest's sake. So I need to find a different outlet. Maybe it's an IG live, maybe it's a separate episode in which I will start to address this. But you may notice I haven't been posting about it either on my Militantly Mix or my personal thing too much. I've shared a couple of other people's posts, but I haven't really addressed it personally. All these mass shootings that are happening, which to be honest happen constantly in the U.S., but there's only some that really hit the news in a big way. And the shooting that took place in Buffalo a couple weeks ago at the predominantly black grocery store with the white supremacist murderer that literally had racist things on the weapon that they were using, literally apologized to a white man for destroying his peace that day. To the Uvalde shootings here in Texas, just a couple hours away from where I'm at, where 18 brown babies were killed and a teacher, while cops were taking their own children out of the school and preventing other parents from getting access to their children, or even engaging the active shooter situation because they were afraid for their lives. Meanwhile, the cop that killed Tamir Rice was also, quote-unquote, afraid for his life when Tamir was playing with a toy. So I don't know. I go between being really sad and really angry. And of course I also live in a state now where they're stripping away, well, I guess it might happen everywhere. Stripping away, health rights for women and femmes and people with uteruses. And it's just like, yeah, I'm not processing it very well at the moment. And then on top of that, I also have a lot of other things happening, good and bad, personally and professionally, that are pulling my attention. So I just feel like I haven't stopped and paused to really get into it. So I won't be addressing it too much on the show besides saying I'm acknowledging that it has happened and I am having feelings, and as everybody is, I just haven't worked out how to talk about it yet. And then now I don't know how to get from this to back into today's episode. The way we have to maneuver, I swear, to go from that kind of violence to just trying to live your everyday life too is insanity. Today's episode, Jesus. Today's episode, my guest is James Camacho. He is a Chinese Puerto Rican mixed comedian. And he is the solo mixed person in his family, which is something we get into on this episode. His Chinese side of the family stayed Chinese. His Puerto Rican side of the family stayed Puerto Rican. And his mother and father are the only people who married outside of their race, leaving James as the solo mixed person in his family. And it's always fascinating for me to have conversations with people who have this experience because it is so different from mine. And you have heard on this show a number of times, I've had solo mixed folks on the show. And I feel like it's really important for people who did grow up with a more mixed family to hear the experiences that solo mixed folks have, because our experiences and their experiences are different. Or our experiences from each other are so different. And I think, you know, as much as we talk about not being monoliths, I think we still move like we're always in a monolith. It mixed people this, it mixed people that. I think I'm guilty of it too, as much as I try not to be. So there's just times when I'm like, I think something and I'm like, well, mixed people, blah, blah, blah. And then I hear a story like James and I'm like, oh shit, he didn't have that experience. So this is one of the things that I really value about being able to host this show, is getting access to stories that are so different from mine that I actually am able to learn something versus just recycling my own story over and over again. Okay, I'm going to go down one more rabbit hole because of James. I'm going to go down one more rabbit hole and then we'll get into today's episode. Over the last 4 years, we are creeping up on the fourth anniversary, which is July 5th. And today I happened to get a Facebook memory from 4 years ago when I was still going through the process of interviewing people for the show. I hadn't released an episode yet. I was just recording and interviewing people. And I hadn't expected at the time that this to be as emotional experience as it was. So you can see the print screen of, or you can see the screenshot of the post on the Instagram, the Militantly Mixed Instagram. I was just like surprised. I thought I was going to be just like hanging out with mixed folks. I didn't know it was going to be as emotional of experience as it is. And not only that it was emotional, especially at that time, it continues to be, but I actually now engage with mixed people on so frequently and on such a regular basis that my life feels again like it was when I was a child, a super mixed life. And I get to have, I now have so many people in my life that I wouldn't have had access to had I not done this show. And so I count myself really lucky amongst podcasters in that majority of the people who have been on my show before have been in my life after. So not just that they came on my show and I never talked to them again, but that they've come on my show and I've had some form of interaction, whether it's through email, Instagram, Twitter, you know, Facebook. We're engaging on a topic or we're just commenting on each other's things, or we're seeing each other's lives on Instagram and stuff. Almost everybody who's been a guest, I've had some form of interaction with them at some point after their episode. And sometimes it's more frequent than others. There's only, I would say, I'm being very generous by saying I think it's less than 10 people that I've never talked to again after recording an episode with them. But really, only off the top of my head, it's only about six that I can think of, six or seven maybe. So I'll say 10 to round it up just in case. But for the most part, at least one or two more times after they've been a guest on the show, I have interacted with them. And then in my personal life, there's some people who've actually become my friends in real life, in meat space, where we've shared meals together, where we've hung out or we talk on a regular basis on video chat or something like that, or we have a group text or something. So I am so lucky to be able to connect with people like this and just like create my own family through this mixed race podcast situation. And I say all that to say, like, James felt like that for me. Like, we didn't know each other before this episode. Teresa Stovall, mixed auntie Teresa, found James's footage somewhere, sent it to me, and was like, this dude seems really funny. You might want to get him on your show. And so started following him and things. And then we had a group email an introductory email and it was like, hey, you don't know me, but I got this podcast. You're mixed. I'm mixed. You want to come on my show? And James was like, yeah, dope. Let's do it. So we never talked beforehand besides that email. And we only talked for about 5 minutes before I hit record. But it felt like I was talking to someone that was like part of my high school crew that I hadn't talked to in a long time. Like he's got real like old friend buddy vibes. Like it was dope. And I enjoyed him so much. The other part of that is that I'm also a comedy nerd. Some of you might know, like back when I used to live in LA, I used to go to comedy shows like 2-3 times a week. I haven't really been able to find myself in the comedy scene here in Houston yet. But the way that a lot of people will freak out over celebrities, I grew up in LA and I grew up in the entertainment business. So I don't really get pressed about like movie stars and TV stars and shit like that. But when I see comedians, I freak out. I get real excited. And so we got to shoot the shit a little bit about like nerding out as comedy fans. But then him as a comedian, he actually knows a lot of these people that I freak out about. So it was fun. It was dope to have that crossover and share. But also, he's just a cool dude. And I really enjoy getting a chance to talk to him for the show. I look forward to being able to see him in person if he ever finds himself in Houston or I find myself in a city he's performing in. So if you find yourself in a city he's performing in, I definitely recommend you checking him out. And I'll put a link in the show notes to all of the way to find him, jamescamacho.com, James Camacho on YouTube and Tickety Talks. Tickety Talk is where I started following him. And then I think he's Camach Bro on Twitter and Instagram. And we just had a blast. He's a dope dude and I'm excited to be able to share his story. So without further ado, please join me in welcoming our latest cousin to the Militantly Mixed family, James Camacho. James, I know you don't have any mixed cousins in your family, but you got mixed cousins in this family. So welcome to the Militantly Mixed family, cousin.
And today I am joined by comedian James Camacho, fellow mixed race Asian out on these streets. James, why don't you introduce yourself to everybody and let's get into it.
Hey, I'm James Camacho. Thanks for having me. How's everyone doing? I'm half Chinese and half Puerto Rican and no podcast awards.
Not yet.
A lot of podcasts I've started and stopped. So that's where I'm at.
I started to do that as like a joke once and then the people who gave me the award kept telling me to keep doing it because it helps people go to their site and stuff like that. So I'm like, yeah, okay, fine. I'll keep telling people.
That's smart. Cause I even thought about like, oh, maybe I can win an award for a podcast.
You got some things. And it's fun. And it was the first time I was ever acknowledged by like an Asian organization as an Asian person. Like I'm always seen as Black, even though I look like I do, I'm rarely seen as Asian. So it was like a really big fucking deal to be Asian people acknowledge me as Asian. Right. You, unlike me, you look a little bit more Asian than I do, but do you get seen? I mean, do people ask you about like why you have a Spanish last name, but you look Chinese?
I know, you know what's funny? I don't even think some people don't even know Camacho is a Spanish last name. Hmm. I maybe once have gotten, why is your last name Spanish?
Really?
Yeah, no one really. Maybe I'm not hanging around enough. The right people, but this is the definition of ambiguous, but it's like some people go, oh, you're Asian. Some people have been like, oh, you're white. Some people have been like, you're Puerto Rican. Like it's just different all around. What I would say the most common is like, you're Asian, but not full Asian. Like, that's probably the most common.
Oh, people do say that to you?
Yeah, that's probably the most common. Like, you're a little funky Asian looking. Like,
people are such jerks.
Yeah. But I always thought it was pretty obvious. Like, if you look at me and go, okay, you must be some type of Asian, and then you see my last name, you should be able to put it together that it's Asian Spanish. Mm-hmm. Now, the exact, you know, whatever it is, may be ambiguous. But I don't think, I think it's giving, I think people are that smart. Like, people don't, or maybe people don't want to assume, oh, Camacho, so you're Spanish. Maybe people just don't want to assume, but.
So for me, people assume all the time. They guess everything but what I am, usually. Like I said, Black people always know I'm Black, but like, Black people ask, what are you mixed with? So they're just letting me know, I know you got something else going on, but I know that you're Black. Right. Everybody else will say, like, what are you? White people say, you're so exotic looking, what are you? So that's fun. But I almost always get some type of Latin American. I get everything south of Mexico. I usually get somebody asking me if I'm from there.
Right. Yeah.
Especially like Peru or Colombia, like where they have an Asian population. Someone will think, like, if they detect the Asian, that's what I get. I'll get like Colombian or whatever.
Right.
But you, so you speak Chinese, but you don't speak Spanish?
Yes.
Does your father speak Spanish?
He does, but he never, I don't know if he, I don't think he uses it. Like, he, when my grandma was alive, he would use it. But then when she passed, it's, he never really, he just uses it, speaks English. So I don't know if it was something that, because my grandma didn't speak any English.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he knew how to speak it, but he just never uses it now. I don't think he has anyone else, like, I don't think he has like a need for it, I guess.
I get, So you didn't like code switch between like English, Chinese, and Spanish interchangeably growing up?
No, just Chinese and English with my mom. And then I went to like, and then, you know, like, I definitely spent more time with my Chinese side. Mm-hmm. But even the Chinese side, it's like they were first generation. So all their first language was Chinese. So I kind of had to like, I had to like out of necessity just to communicate. Mm-hmm. But with my cousins on my Puerto Rican side, they all spoke English. So
you didn't have to
use Spanish. Yeah.
I see. What got you into comedy? Like, how did you get into doing comedy?
So, it's not really like a great story, but it's like, it kind of just happened. But I knew from a young age, like, I was a very creative kid and I wanted to be in some type of entertainment, some type of artsy thing. So as a kid, I would always like, I was fascinated with like movies and TV shows and like cartoons, just any entertainment you watch on TV. I was just like more fascinated, like, a little, like, I didn't just kind of watch it and like enjoy it. I watched and enjoyed it and became like almost like, I want to be a part of that, you know? So when I was a kid, I would draw, like, make like my own comic books. I'd write them. I would just take computer paper and fold them in half and make comic books. My mom would get so mad because I would take all the printer paper. I would always have like notebooks. My whole life I've had notebooks where I just write things in, stories. Then it became like, even when I was like getting a little into sports, it was just all baseball stats, short stories, comic books. And then when I got, you know, into high school and stuff, I kind of, you know, became more obsessed with like my social life and stuff, like making friends, being cool. But then, you know, college came, and then obviously, you know, you start to get a little more mature, figure out what you need to do in life. And throughout the whole time, like, even when I was a little more obsessed with, like, you know, dating and, like, friendship and, like social life, I still always had, like, a closeted, like, interest in comedy and show business and, like, how to get into the entertainment industry. And it wasn't until college where I was kind of like, all right, I got, like, it was like my sophomore year. It's like, what am I majoring in? What am I interested in? What am I going to do with my life? Then your parents start pressuring you. You got to figure out what you want to do. And then I was just like, I this is what I'm interested. I just went to the stuff I was interested in, which was theater, writing, and creative writing. And I just started taking those classes. I just made, and I declared those majors as my majors, English and theater. And I was taking acting classes, theater classes, screenwriting classes. And eventually, I tried stand up because everything I wrote was comedy related. I was part of like a comedy troupe in college. So I tried stand up, and stand up just seemed, it just fit because you write the stuff and then you perform the stuff. So it's like you're everything. You're the whole, I guess you're the whole production. So I remember pretty quickly once I started doing stand up, it went from like, I would do one set a week that lasted like a month. And then I was doing two sets a week for 2 weeks. And then it just, after that, was just every single day. Mm. For now, here we are, seven, almost 8 years later.
Did you think you were a funny person the whole time, or like even growing up and stuff like that? Or did you just feel like you fell into it because you were performing?
I always felt like in real life, I thought maybe I wasn't funny to everyone else, but I always felt like if someone was watching me, like in a sitcom way, me go, but I thought people would laugh at that. Like, you know what I mean? Like in a TV show, if a joke's made, the other person's not laughing. But that sitcom audience is laughing. That's always felt like, I'm like, this is like a funny situation. And, you know,
that's funny.
Right. So that's how I always felt. I always felt like that. And I always felt like my ideas were, I think everyone has ideas like, oh, that's funny to me, or that's funny to me. I had these ideas that I thought could be funny. And then, I wasn't sure if other people thought it was funny. But then when I started doing stand-up, I was already had stage presence, and I've always been like a really good writer. So, you know, now I would confidently say I'm funny, but not even on stage. On stage is a performance, you know?
Yeah.
I can be funny in the moment too, but it's like, I feel like in real life, when I'm most comfortable with someone, like I feel like I could be like hilarious, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. It's so fucking, because you get so, when you stand up for long enough or comedy, you just learn how to, you make it a science, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So like, even like the greatest comedians, like, yeah, they're funny. But, like, I know, like, they're writing jokes, you know? They're like, doing the same act over, like they're touring with the, you know, the jokes, and they're practicing and structure and stuff. So are they funny? Yes, because they have funny senses of humor and they're able to. But like, the funniest people in the world are the people that usually don't even try to go on stage, just in real life, that crack you up, you know?
Yeah. My husband's like the funniest person I know. Like, that's pretty much the whole reason why we're together, is because he made me laugh so much when we were younger.
Right.
He's never tried to go on stage, but we will sit there and write type fives together with no intention of it ever being something that we actually ever do.
Oh, that's fine. But
we'll do it in the car and shit like that. Like, we actually had a notepad for a period of time where we would
get into
these movies. Yeah, like, we'd do it. But he's never performed. And I only did it because, like I said, a friend of mine asked me to be in like mixed queer women's show. And I'm so glad that I tried it. I think I would probably try it again, but I really do feel like I'm dinner table funny. Like, I can tell you a story about some shit that actually happened, and I can embellish it enough that it's funny, but I don't know that I'm stage funny necessarily. I would love to, because those are the people that I admire the most. Like, we were talking off air, like movie celebrities and stuff like that. It's like, oh, cool, look at that, who that person is. But if I see comedians, I freak out. Like, I don't know why. Yeah. That's where I get like really nerdy and shit like that. So I enjoy that. But I noticed, so I follow you on the Tickety Talks, I was telling you. And I know that you do, not all of your set is about you being mixed, but because you seem to do like a lot of crowd work. Like, people just seem to, I don't know if that's just the way your TikTok is curated, but you seem like you get a lot of people that just start talking to you.
Yeah, I don't know. It's so tough because, like, I want to put out content, but I don't want to give jokes away, you know?
Oh, no, okay, I get you. That's smart.
It's smart, but then it's like, you know, people do kind of be like, have that perception. It's you know, it's people be like, oh, you just, what do you, you know, people just yell at you the whole time, or people talk to you the whole time, or you don't have any materials. Like, I have materials, like, I can't just give it away. Now, there's some jokes, like the material I'm putting on that now are like old jokes I don't even do anymore.
Mm.
But there are some instances where, like, I feel like the joke is kind of done. I'm done telling it. I will put it up. But
that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. It's weird because I don't want people to just see all crowd work and stuff. But then if I have a joke, I don't want to give it away too early. And also, it's like, it may not even be ready, you know?
Yeah.
I've done things where I put them up and then they're not done, and then like it kind of ruins it.
Mm.
People will be like, well, that's not funny, or it's not all the way there, but you kind of already gave away. It's a tough line, especially now with social media and trying to go viral and trying to curate a fan base, because before, you would just do shoot your special every year, then it would just all come out. Now it's like, well, now people want stuff all the time, you know?
Yeah.
So you know, I put the crowd work stuff because it's funny and it's entertaining, but I also want people to know I have material, you know? So like, yeah. If you come see me, you know, I guess the bigger thing is like, I don't want people to come see me and then like shout at me the whole time where it's like, yeah. Like, I have jokes, you know, so.
I have jokes. Please let me tell my jokes.
Yeah, it's just tough, though, because you want to feed the algorithm monster.
Yeah.
And I make money on social media, too, so it's like I want to get money, too, but it's tough. It's tough. It's a tough. You got to – that's why I try to – you know, I think right now I'm in a very crowd work heavy with this stuff, so I think I'm going to actually look for, like, some actual material to put out.
Yeah.
So people don't think it's just –
So yeah. I think I've seen more things that relate to like your Chinese heritage and like speaking Chinese and taking school, going to Chinese school and stuff like that. Like I know I've seen more of that, but and you did say earlier you interacted more with your Chinese side than the other.
Yeah.
Do you get how often does your mixedness come up in any of your sets?
I bring it up or the crowd brings it up or.
Oh, is that what usually happens? Is the crowd is the reason why?
No,
it comes up?
I have material about. So, like, my set pretty much is like, my set's kind of divided in like, trying to think. So it starts off with like kind of an introductory stuff. I talk about my race. I talk about love with my parents. Then I kind of talk about my being an only child. That's kind of like the introduction, like who I am, and then the middle stuff and the end stuff. Are kind of like more, I guess, opinion-based things, you know?
Mm.
I'm kind of going down the line. Who am I? You know, what am I? Why am I here? Where am I? You know, are you single or date? All the questions you kind of like ask people. So I kind of go through that, and then I kind of talk. Then the later part of my set's more opinion-based. So yeah, I talk about it not as much as I used to. I think I used to talk about it would literally be half my set. Talking about being my ethnicity. And now it's kind of gotten, I would say maybe the first 7 to 10 minutes might be about that. And now when I do talk about my parents, it's not just about their, it's not like, oh, they're Chinese, they're Puerto Rican. It's just more kind of like just the stuff, just the actual stuff they did. As nothing about being
regular ass parent and kid stuff.
Yeah. And I'll kind of refer like, oh, they're Chinese because they did that. But it's not, before it was so like, Chinese, Puerto Rican, Chinese, Puerto Rican, Chinese, Puerto Rican. Now it's a little, I think it's because like, that's probably in the beginning what separated me from most comics. And it still is what makes me very interesting. And it's still also what I think a lot of the people that follow me, they follow me because of, for those reasons.
Yeah.
But as a comic, I mean, like, I'm like, yeah, I don't want that to define me. You know, I don't think anyone wants their, it's almost like if you, I don't know, if you're like a great looking person, you know, people are like, want to give you stuff, like want to hang out. It's like, well, you know, I have like this, I like art. Maybe I draw like, or I want to be known for other things too, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Or some people blow up and then or they're famous for one thing, but they also have a passion for another thing, you know? And they want people to kind of see them another way. So I think for me, it's like, I understand my individuality and is part of who I am is being mixed race, but also it's like, you know, I'm a comedian, I have funny thoughts and I have points I want to make and just stuff like that, I guess.
Do you feel like it might have been part of your identity, like discovering kind of who you were as you were crafting jokes about in the beginning of your career? Or was it just like you testing it out to see like what was separating you from other comics?
I think I had a lot. Well, I had a lot of, so when you start out, I think you start out with so much to talk about because there's so much you want to get off your chest, I think, as a comic. Like for me, everything's very personal. So it's like I wanted to complain or make jokes about the way I was a mixed race, the way my mom raised me, the way my dad raised me, how much I hated being an only child, you know? Like I had so much from my childhood. Like I still have things like I'm writing stuff now about how my mom literally did not care if I had any friends or any social life. It was just all about grades. Like
super Asian thing.
Yeah. Like I want to just literally sometimes ask, like, you didn't care about any friends. Like, you know, people, that's what depresses people. Like no friends. Like we're social beings.
Yeah.
And if I had told her that growing up, she would have been like, your best friend is A. That's who your best friend is. Your tutor's your best friend. Like,
yeah.
Literally, like, she wouldn't let me go to parties. She wouldn't, like, I had worked on this bit now where I got asked to go to, like, this girl who I had a crush on asked me to go to the mall with her, like out of a fairy tale. And she wouldn't let me go. Like, so I have a lot. I mean, it's more therapy.
Yeah, of course. Then,
you know, I it's so funny because I go to therapy. It's almost like my therapist explains these things to me, like why, you know, and like, it's so great because now when I talk about it on stage, I know the background, so I'm smarter. I know why, so I can kind of control that. But I got to also walk the line of being too sad and, you know, be funny. So, yeah, I just had so much I wanted to talk about. I hated being an only child. I've always wanted a sibling. Like, it's like, yeah. So I have all this stuff I'm getting off my chest still. But then I have all this stuff, too, like what's going on in my life now. I have a girlfriend now. We're getting very serious. I have, you know, I have hobbies and stuff, opinions I also want to talk about. So it's really just kind of like getting the stuff off my chest and then getting from the past and getting the stuff off my chest now. You know, that's really all comedy is, complaining.
Yeah, I think the same with being a podcaster, too, because I got into it because I like to talk and I like to talk to people. And then I didn't realize how often I was working shit out in the conversation with other people. Like, you might say something that prompts a memory and I'm like, oh, fuck, I went through that shit, too. And then now, you know, now we're in Charmaine therapy mode for a minute there. And then I know I've provided that space accidentally for other people who come on, too, like. Yeah, we're social creatures. We got to work it out some kind of way and some time. But I think that maybe it's because I'm a person that suffers from depression, but the kind of comics that I've always found the most entertaining were the ones who could process like social anxiety, depression, and all that kind of stuff that they went through, like on stage, and also find a way to be funny while they're doing it. Like, those are the people that I've always tended to gravitate towards. I don't know why. It just feels good.
Yeah, no, and it's not easy.
Right.
Because it's not the most universal. It's universal, but there's still, like, I think in LA and New York, you got people in therapy, you got people talking about their feelings. But there are parts of the country where, like, you go, like, I'm in therapy. They just take their whiskey and they just start drinking. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. Like,
wow.
So, you know, but everyone has that, like, those feelings of, like, whatever, not feeling, not belonging, but it's a matter, like, someone, I think a lot of people have them, it's really pushed down, you know? But I think what I'm trying to get to the point is, like I feel like sometimes I'll be on the road in some certain places. Even, like, last night, on Monday, I did a show for a crowd that was a little drunker, and they liked more toilet and sex jokes, and I'm up there talking about therapy and like... And I could tell, like the laughs were there, but they were more like, I feel like it was a TED talk almost, you know? And, but I've always maintained, like, I mean, that's been my whole career, really. It was like, I have all this original personal stuff I want to talk about. Sometimes you go to a club where people, they just want to laugh, and you might come across as a little, like, too open, you know? It's like, just give us the dick jokes. Like, or just talk about your race. Like that's why the race stuff is actually really great, because it's race. Everyone can understand race, but it's also personal at the same time.
Yeah.
So I've always felt like there's two type of crowds. There's the crowds that want to hear your self-expression and you know, really, really creative thoughts. And then there's crowds that just, like, just make me laugh. Make me laugh, clown, in a way. You know? So I don't know where this all came from.
Just getting it off your chest.
Just getting it off. Yeah.
Hearing you talk about, like, being in different parts of the country, like, I've only experienced comedy in, like, LA, San Francisco, Boston, and New York.
Oh, wow.
So only in the big places, right? Like, I don't think I've really, Sacramento, because I lived there for a little while, and Austin, because I lived there for a little while, but, like, those weren't big comedy towns. So I don't think I've experienced a crowd that wasn't there for, like, you know, the whole show type of thing. Like, whatever you're going to bring to me, I'm here for all of those things.
Yeah. That's
New York was the hardest place I've ever watched comedy in, though. Like, those people were they seemed to be ready to fight, but this is also like 15 years ago or something like that.
Right. You have to be creative and smart in New York, but it's gotta be really just great joke writing. You know, you know, they're not going to let, it's gotta be smart and kind of in your face. You know, they're not going to let too much time go by. Without you're punching your jokes right into their face.
Right.
That's kind of what what works. And in LA, you can kind of be more playful and care of a character and silly. In New York, people don't want to hear that.
No.
Or see that, really. They just right. want to be kind of like told really. I'd say New York's all about the writing, and then LA's definitely more about performance. And most places, it's just making people like just worrying about making people laugh, whatever way it may be, you know?
Yeah.
So as any comic that's not bringing, if you have a fan base that knows you, you do whatever you want.
You're right, but, right.
You know, as a comic that's kind of unknown, it's definitely your job to, like, I guess to say, read the crowd and adapt to every situation while trying to maintain yourself, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But you just got to know, it's like, you know, if everyone loved who we were, you know, we'd have a million friends.
Sure.
You know? We'd be politicians, but that's just not how it works, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you said you're an only child. Do you have mixed cousins or anything like that? Did you have other mixed people when you were growing up?
No. So I'm an only child, and my parents are the only people that married outside their race.
Really?
So I'm just the only
monoracial family. Puerto Rican cousins and monoracial Chinese cousins, and
maybe that's what makes being an only child even more, I guess, lonely. Because I'm the only child and the only halfy. My girlfriend. I think like all of her cousins are mixed race too. Like all of them.
Like, same with me.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Both of my parents are biracial. So all of my aunts and uncles are mixed, and all of my cousins are mixed. And all of us, like four of us, lived together on and off growing up. Six of us, I think. Yeah. On and off growing up. So I'm always around, like I was literally always around mixed people.
Yeah.
And then when I was 15, I moved to Sacramento. Like, I had some mixed friends because we were on a military base, but like most of the people were just white, and it was the first time I was ever around white people.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's how I found out like white people don't have cousins, or they don't have many cousins the way like I have a ton of cousins, and they're all
mixed. They just don't. We don't speak of that person.
Yeah, I guess they don't really know them. Or whatever. Whereas didn't share a bed with four cousins. Like what? So that was my experience, I guess, is that everybody I was around. I think
it's so interesting you said, because that sounds like Kevin to me, because you have all these cousins that are mixed race. You sleep in beds together, and you get to share the mixed experience with. I literally was the half Asian, half Chinese everywhere I went. Even my parents are full race. So I'm the only half mixed race person of my whole entire family. So I'm like a freak. You know, like everywhere, like not free, but you know what I mean? It's like, I have jokes.
But you feel unusual in your spaces that you should just be regular.
I'm not, no one else is like me. I go to another place. No one else is like me. Dude, I when people are half Asian and half white or half Asian, whatever, and like, they look like me, I feel so comfortable with them.
Right.
I don't know what it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that, I think, like I had a friend growing up, my whole childhood, he was Chinese and white. We were best friends. And now like, there's this guy, comic. He's like Korean and Irish, and like sometimes like I'll bring him on the road with me just because, like, I don't know, I just feel like comfortable, you know.
Is that the?
He's 22. Like, he's listening.
Oh, he's a young one. Oh, I remember I just bought him out
because he's mixed race.
I used to do that shit too all the time. Like, yeah. I mean, I have a podcast with a friend of mine. We talk about comics and stuff like that, and we're both black mixed. We grew up together. We've known each other since we were 8, and like a big part of our bond is just that we were mixed. We didn't even know that the other one was reading comics until we were adults, because as kids, we didn't talk. That wasn't what we black kids. We weren't allowed to be nerds. We didn't talk about that kind of shit when we were growing up, but we talked about being mixed.
I know maybe just black comedians, but I know a lot of my black friends are black coworkers, comedians, Yu-Gi-Oh, comic books, like Magic the Gat. Like,
yeah.
I'm like, you're a bigger nerd than I am. This is crazy. Like, I'm the sports guy, and you guys are all playing with cards. Like,
yeah, like now we can be out of the closet about being nerds, and so like we're hardcore into it. But like even as I opened up my comic book shop, like I opened it with a fellow black nerd too, and we were the first black owned comic book shop in Texas. But like, because if I'm there and people don't know my deal, I'd say black and Blasian owned or something like that. But
right.
But yeah, like we get people coming in, they're just like, we can be nerds here. It's like, yeah, fucking come here and be a nerd with us. But yeah, at the time I was growing up, you couldn't really be a public nerd and shit like that. But we just bonded over being mixed.
Right. Well, I grew up in New Jersey too. And like a part of my, I still started comedy at a young age. So I'm grateful for that. But I mean, I was in a, I was in, like, I grew up in Jersey, you know, I grew up with, like, in the 90s, not the 90s, I guess, like, the early 2000s, but it was still, like, if you were a theater kid, like, people thought you were gay, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so, like, I was always, like, oh, I don't, or not even just get a bit, like, a loser or a dork. I'm, like, I don't want to be a dork, I want to be cool, you know?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I never, I always had it in me, like, oh, I want to do theater, I want to do the plays in high school. I never, I'm, like, ah, man, people are going to. I'm weird, man. People are going to think I'm a dork. I'm not going to get invited to parties. And it just sucks, you know, that I just kind of like didn't act on any of my dreams or impulses until I got into college, which is not late. It's not like.
It's not super late, but still.
But look, like I could have been Pete Davidson. Pete Davidson started when he was like 12, you know.
I know.
You know.
I like, I wish we could just be like, that's what I like. So I'm 44 now and I don't care anymore. Yeah, I'm a comic book nerd. I'm 44. I'm still a comic book nerd. I do cosplay. You know, I'm letting all that kind of stuff hang out now. But I spent so much of, like, my teens and 20s just keeping that shit quiet. Like, even, again, my friend that I have that podcast with, we were in our 30s. We've known each other since we were 8 years old. We were 34 when we found out that we were both comic book nerds. So we started our show.
Like, 26 years of collecting comics together and just
trading shit. Like, we could have brought down how much money we spent because we, you know, we could have played off of each other's collection, but we didn't know to do that. So now I let it all hang out. Like, whatever my shit is, that's what I'm into.
I hope when I have kids, I'm like, my girlfriend and I were talking about when we have kids, we're like, we're gonna sign them up for all the stuff. And whatever they like to do, we're going to let them, we're going to be open to anything. It's like, even with like my mom being like, you just got to study, you can't do this. It's like, I just feel like it's like, you know, it's the worst feeling is like wasted potential, I guess. You know, like, you know, like if you really want to do something, like I get this from like young professionals that have good jobs and stuff. They're like, oh, like what you do is so cool. I've always wanted to like paint. I'm like, just do that. And they're like,
just paint.
Like all this stuff, you know? And I don't even fight. Like, I used to be like, come on, like, slap him around. I give up. Like, now, like, I go, hey, you should, you know, if you have time. You already have a job. You have money. You don't have to worry about money. Yeah. And they go, oh, yeah. And they always say, they never do, you know. And I just kind of see that. And I go, oh, thank God I kind of went for it. Even though I may be just destitute in the future. I feel like I have to, like, me knowing I went for it, I could totally fail. I could totally go nowhere with this. Or be making just crap money. And then, you know, my girlfriend is, you know, getting her PhD. She's going to be super successful. I don't know what's going to happen in the future, but it's like, as long as I tried my hardest and like, I am literally sunrise to sundown, just trying to figure out how to make it and be funnier. So I know if I give it my all and it doesn't work out, at least I can go to bed or I can die being like, you know what? I did. I laid it all out there. But the worst 100%, is when, like, you don't lay it out there and then it's over and then.
Yeah, I think about that all the time because especially on the Asian side and, you know, not to keep stereotyping Asians, but there are definitely some traits that East Asians in particular all seem to have, which is that very driven education and
work ethic.
Yeah. And I do. I have a crazy ass work ethic, but I've now transitioned that from being like a director of HR in the tech field to doing my own podcast. I opened a comic book shop. I didn't stick it out because at the level of resources we had, we couldn't afford to pay me and my partner and stuff like that too. And so we decided, and then I was starting to get attention on podcasting. So I was like, I'll focus on podcasting. You focus on the shop, you know? But so I don't feel like I failed though, because even though I left it, I don't ever have to answer the question. I wonder what it would have been like if I didn't start.
You tried, you went for it, you know, like that's more than what most people do.
Yeah.
You know?
So now it's all about happiness or pleasure or something like that. Like, I fucking love doing this podcasting thing. I love getting a chance to talk to people from all over about whatever their experiences is. Your mixedness is so different than mine. I want to know about it.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff is fun for me. Going to comic cons, doing comic stuff still, even though I don't own a shop anymore, like, all that shit is fun. And I spent so much of my younger days, like, just driving, trying to be the best thing. Like, how the fuck did I end up a director of HR? Did I care about HR? Like, what the fuck happened to me? So stuff like that. Like, I'm so pro, like, trying to do the kind of stuff that you like, even at whatever level, because I think you still, like, you have to work hard to be a comedian. You have to.
especially now,
half-ass it. Yeah,
I think now it's not. I'm not just like I'm an entrepreneur. Basically, I started my own company from nothing. It's James Camacho comedy. Yeah. Like, it's like me now with social media. Like I do fantasize about in the 80s or not before social media and the internet. All you had to do was just do 5 shows a night, get the best set, and try to get on the late night show. Which
right.
I mean, that's no easy thing. But if my only job is to perfect my stand up and go out and do 5 shows a night. That's great. That's all I want to do is just write and do comedy, you know? Yeah. And you know, the money in stand up has never changed, but the prices of real estate in New York have obviously quadrupled.
Right, yeah.
So back in the day, you could make a living being a comic, just doing comedy. Now it's like there's less spots available for people, there's more comics, and now you have all these other factors. So now I got to figure out how to be a social media person. I got to figure out how to create content and write jokes, and it's a lot more, you know.
Yeah, it's a totally different game now.
Yeah.
So you being so do you, I guess, identify yourself mostly with your Chinese culture and stuff because you had more access to that, or do you ever get to feel Puerto Rican?
No, I don't really ever. It's so weird because like I'll do a show, I'll say I'm Puerto Rican, and then someone will be like, you know, Boricua or whatever it is. And I always say it back, but I always feel like I'm lying. Yeah.
Oh, you I'm do? Like,
yeah, whatever. Because I didn't really had much, like, when I was growing up, I would see my cousins on the holidays. That's it, you know? But for the most part of my life was growing up in a New Jersey suburb, going to Chinese school. Being raised by a Chinese mom. My dad was there, but my dad literally worked the opposite hours that I was awake.
Mm.
So he like taught night classes and stuff. So when he, and then during the day, he would sleep during the day. So I would never, like there would be days, weeks where I wouldn't see him just because we just like, yeah. So my mom definitely like, she wanted me to like do dragon dances and stuff. So I definitely feel like I am more in tune with that culture. But then also it's like, I don't even feel comfortable with, you know, like Chinese people. Like, I think like if there was a room, like I always joke about this. If I go to prison, you kind of got to go to the
room. That'd be real tough for us.
I definitely feel like I think if I were to take a chance on my life, I would go with the Chinese people. I think I feel more comfortable. Like, but I also know full well, like I would be like, well, I'm only half or I don't look it. Maybe.
Yeah.
And then when I hang out with Chinese people too, it's like, I talk different and like I always feel like, especially when I hang out with like your, I guess, stereotypical Chinese people, I feel like I'm maybe a little more extroverted, you know?
Mm.
So I always feel awkward about that. And then you know, the opposite, if I hang out with, you know, the Spanish sides, I feel like I'm a little more quiet. It's just like, I can't really even, I guess I'm just a classic mixed race person.
Yeah, no, seriously, because that's 100%. Because when I lived in LA, I lived in the Sawtelle area, which is like, they call it Little Osaka. I don't call it that. I hate that.
Yeah.
But it's the smaller of the two Japanese communities. And I was like, I'm going to be Japanese as hell. I'm going to get in there. But I grew up black. So it was just me trying to be, you know, connect. I got there and I just felt black as hell. Then I moved here to Houston. I'm in the Third Ward, which is a historically black community. I had a black owned business, the whole thing. All of a sudden I turned into like this little Japanese grandma. And I'm like, what the fuck happened to me? Like I moved to a place where I should be the most comfortable, but I end up countering it with the opposite thing. And like the way I grew up, I always say that I was like, I was black all the time, but I was weekend Japanese. Like whenever I'd go to like my grandma's house and stuff.
Yeah.
But I have a very loud voice, and while Japanese do have loud voices, naturally, we're always like trying to push it down, but I can't push it down. I have two volumes. I have like whisper or screaming. I don't have a middle. And so I feel like I don't fit in Japanese spaces because I don't know how to turn on the stereotypical, like, you know, Japanese thing. And then, so that what you said when you're like a little bit more extroverted around Chinese and a little quieter around Spanish folks, like I 100% feel that.
Right.
That being said, like I can, the sentence sounds stupid. I can get black quick. I can't. I can't get Japanese quick though. Like I have to really kind of like get myself in a place to try, but I always feel like some kind of an imposter. Like even my Japanese is not very well, but I don't speak very well. But when I do, I feel good. Like I feel like I'm trying. And then like a real Japanese person will look at me and I'm like, oh no, I didn't. I failed, didn't I? Like I just can't. Yeah. I can't feel fully comfortable.
I think I almost maybe feel most comfortable with other people that are mixed race.
Me too.
Because no one really, I think it's the ambiguity and the confusion that I can relate to.
Yeah.
Because every other race is like, you just feel like, oh, I'm not white. So they're, you know, I'm not really like, or I'm not black. Like, I'm not really like we can't really fully get there. But with other people that are like, I don't know what the hell either. Like, and then when someone's the same as you, then that's when I really feel that. That sucks because, like, that's such a small portion of people, you know?
Yeah.
I love to be like, yeah.
I think there's a lot of us out there. I don't think we know how to move as a group.
It's such a new, it's a new thing. I think a generation right now, this mixed race. Like, my girlfriend and I have kids. If we have kids, it's like, I think there's going to be a lot more mixed race.
There's going to be way more. And they're going to, like, understand themselves as mixed people, way bigger than we did.
Right. Like the pioneers of talking about it.
Because like both of my parents are biracial. My black grandfather married a British white lady, and then my white grandfather married a Japanese one. Like both of them were military, whatever. So technically I'm half white, but I don't know any white people. Like I know my British Nana. I don't know any other white people in my family.
Yeah.
So I don't have a white identity at all. I didn't even grow up around white people. I wasn't even around white people till I was 15 years old. So I don't really know how to maneuver spaces where it's predominantly white, even though I ended up working in the tech field and that was predominantly white for a while.
White people are like, it's like, I always feel uncomfortable. I always feel like I'm poor around them.
Yeah,
you know? So it's like, especially in New York, it's like, I mean, I've been fortunate to like, get some privilege. Like, for example, it's like I've been I fly a lot, so that like, I have like Delta whatever executive card.
Yeah.
I every time I go to the airport, I go to this the Sky Lounge club thing, and it's just like buffet, free bar, just every, like the music is like, it's everything's just the most bougiest it gets.
Yeah.
And everyone there is just a white person with a fedora, you know? And I'm literally in there, like, I got joggers on, I got one pant leg up, one pant leg down.
Nice.
I got a baseball tee on, and, like, I feel, and I'm talking to these people, and I just feel like they're just like, what is this? And I'm just, like, trying to fit in, like, even the way I eat, you know? I'm scared to ask for hot sauce, because they're going to be like, excuse me? Like,
that's funny.
Like, the whole time, I'm just kind of like, but it just might be in my own head. I don't know.
I mean, I think they're probably not nearly as worried about you as you are worried about them being worried about you, because I feel like I suffered that for a really long time when I worked in like the tech field in particular.
Yeah.
At this point, I don't even care anymore, especially if they ask me what I am. Like, I'll let them do the whole Olympics. Like,
right.
Where are you from? Oh, I'm from California. Where are you really from? Well, Long Beach. But really, Sacramento, I was born there, but then I grew up in Long Beach. I'm a military kid. Like, I'll do the whole thing until they ask what your brown is, because I know that's what they want to know.
But
it used to be the case that I would bend over backwards to try to, like, make them feel it in comfort, because I was just kind of raised to make white people feel more comfortable, I guess. But I don't do that shit anymore.
There's no point, too, because you're never going to...
It's never going to work.
Unless you become white, they're never going to really understand. Right. You know.
Yeah. So I think it's good for us to just take up the space that we take up, take it up the way we take it up. And, you know, they can either get used to our existence or not. But that's going to be... That's no longer going to be my responsibility.
I don't try either. Like, I'll be in there. I'll be just a slob. I'll have like a stack of food, what everyone else is eating, little portions. Like, I'll just do my own thing. But I just feel it, like, you know, and I don't know. I just feel, it's just my whole life. Like, I'm making it about this one thing, like this white people. It's like, anywhere I go, I feel kind of like, you know, I have to prove myself or I'm different, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely the mixed kids play. Like, we always feel like we have to validate in some way, shape, or form. It feels really good. Like, I'm in my fucking 40s, so Right. I don't have to do that shit anymore. I did feel like I had to do that shit for a long time, but now I really don't, you know, I don't, really don't care about it anymore. So it feels great to just take up space. But then every now and then the Asian part kicks in and I'm just like, I'm taking up too much space right now. And I'm trying to fight that. Although it's still, you know, it is a part of my culture and I get why my inclination happens, you know, because I was raised around a Japanese grandmother. The difference is Japanese don't teach their kids, like in America, they don't teach us Japanese. Right. They want us to assimilate. That I was always jealous of my Chinese friends because they all spoke it.
I know. I wish. I honestly wish I was in such a rebellious, not the right word, but I wish I tried harder and I knew how to speak it better now because I would get more opportunities for TV and stuff, like just different type of things.
Yeah. But, well, also, like, as the mixed kid, too, like, you're, like, talk about assimilation. Like, you really need people to like you. So it's, if you're going to be weird and not speak the same language, you'll feel weird, you know.
Yeah. Chinese school that. Was literally, it's probably one of the things that, one of the big things that messed me up, but, like, it's affected who I am today. Mm-hmm. It's like every Sunday, I would go to this thing where I look different than everyone else. Mm-hmm. I was like five grades held back. So not only am I different looking, I'm an ogre in a class of like kindergartners, you know, like, and they're smarter than me. Like, so not only did I feel stupid and different, but also just kind of like that, like loser too, like outsider because you're not full. And just like, it was like from like, I remember it was like noon or 1 PM to like 4 or 5. The whole time I was just in my head, quiet and embarrassed, you know, every 30 minutes. And it was just like, and it just my mom forced me to go, you know, and then it finally had to be like, you know, I don't want to do this anymore.
Can you still pick it up though?
But it takes me like a week. Like if I, you know, whenever I go visit my grandparents, I can get it back in like a week.
Okay.
Takes me a couple of days. It's like riding a bike, kind of. It's like, it just, I got to hear words again, and then I got to like kind of like say it myself, and then like just be forced to kind of like depend on it. It comes back, yeah, and that's fun too because like every time I go out to visit, I feel like my Chinese is like on point by the end of the week.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Do you have any aspirations to try to do a set in Chinese?
No, I don't even.
You're like, fuck that.
Way too much to just think about how to just, I guess, transcribe things or finding the right words.
Like, can you be funny in another language?
Yeah. Well, that's that too. Then there's different sensibilities and what people find funny. I do want to go and do a set in China though, in English. But like, I know there's comedy clubs out there, American comedy clubs. I do want to go and do that for sure. I know I should probably look into that. Today. Yeah.
But, like, I'm gonna do that today. Yeah, that'd be amazing. I always feel like so I still haven't been able to go to Japan yet, but most of my family moved to Hawaii. I only have a few relatives still in Japan. But I feel like because my Japanese is so terrible that it'll be like the thing that makes me feel even less Japanese. Like I really won't be able to feel Japanese after that.
Yeah.
Whereas like my little bit of Japanese right now, I kind of feel like Japanese. All right, so we're going to come to the end of this. Thank you so much. This has been fun to chat with you. I hope to be able to see you in person sometime, you know, performing. If I catch that you're going to be in Houston or LA or something like that when I'm traveling, I definitely.
No, thanks. This is so much fun. I love talking about this. It's always good to talk with someone else that understands stuff, you know?
It makes it such a difference. What do you love most, though, about being mixed? I know sometimes it's awkward, but like, is there something that you love most about being mixed?
I like about it, and I think this is something I like. I like the being different, I guess. I like how it's different. It's unique. I have, you know, it's funny because I just complain about how I don't feel like I belong anywhere, but it's like, basically spent the whole podcast. Oh, don't accept
we all it. Do that shit. It's fine.
But I feel like I've been like this my whole life. Like I never wanted to wear stuff that like other people had. Mm-hmm. Like, people get these like Nirvana shirts from Target. Like 800 people have that shirt. Like, what do you? So I've always been like, I want to be different. right? And I definitely like the fact that I am this race. It's unique. It's cool. It's special. I think it's a positive thing. But there obviously there comes a lot with it in terms of, like, you know, not feeling like you belong and kind of being alone. But I don't know. I think the best, my favorite thing, and this is not even like a real, this is more like a wholesome answer, but it's like, I guess I like being, special. Mm-hmm. I guess a more like tangible thing would be like, I guess for like, maybe for Ash Show Business, because I think they like that. Being mixed race is definitely cool now, I guess. Mm-hmm. In yeah, I also I like being different.
Yeah,
I like different, and maybe as much as I complain about not fitting in, I also don't think I would want to be kind of like put in a box, you know.
Yeah, like, I don't mean this in the bad way that it comes out, but when I think about, like, what it would be to be monoracial and monocultural, I'd just be like, you can't mix, like you can't mix things. Like, I mean, I also enjoy, like, mixing black food with Japanese food. Like,
you know,
karage with waffles and stuff like that. Like, I'm getting something that is Japanese, but it's also kind of black, and then I'm mixing it with a traditional black meal or something like that. Like, I like to be able to mix and match my cultures within a moment, like, you know, within a space, with whether it's my food or my dance or whatever.
Right. I think we also can kind of create our own narratives. I think if you're 100% something, there probably is societal pressure to just be your race or act this way, you know,
or like participate in whatever the monolithic idea is.
Right.
Those cultures. Yeah.
Right. It kind of goes back to like, oh, like black people can't seem nerdy, you know?
Yeah.
Why? It's like, oh, it's because whatever perception, you know?
Yeah.
And I think if you're black and white, you or whatever, black or Japanese or whatever, you kind of almost can fall back on like, well, I mean, I'm this too. And then it's
that was me with manga. And so like, I could get away with being a manga and anime nerd because my friends would be like, oh, well, she's Japanese too, or she got a Japanese mom, so it's okay. So I'd be like secretly a comic book nerd, but they only saw that I was into anime.
Right.
There was a way for me to get around it that other black kids could not get around it because they didn't have a Japanese grandma to back it up. You know what I'm saying? Like,
And also, I think I'm not 100% certain this, but for anyone that's like any black people or anyone that's like kind of ashamed of their obsession with manga or whatever, I think Michael B. Jordan is like the biggest comic book nerd.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, and like he's the most famous, one of the most famous actors in the world. So don't be just what you like shouldn't.
Like your shit, yeah.
Like, just lean into it, you know, and like, just cares.
Just have fun, yeah. No, yeah. I think our the thing about us not being able to like enjoy life once we become an adult doesn't make sense. Like, you know, when people say like, oh, you know, he's a grown man and he plays video games. Yeah, he fucking let him have fun. Like, play fucking video games. I read comics. I collect toys. I'm staring at a whole bunch of toys right now because I didn't have toys growing up. I was on welfare, so now I got adult money. I got fucking toys. Like, that's something that I'm into, and I want to be able to enjoy that shit. So, I think even in terms of like being monocultural, I want to be able to mix and match all the stuff that I have access to growing up. And I think that's so much more fun, or I'm perceiving it as so much more fun than just being a monocultural or monoracial person. I don't know.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell everybody how to find you, and if you have any shows coming up or something like that, that you want to kind of highlight in the next like couple weeks.
Yeah, you can follow me at Kamach Bro on everything. That's I know, I made it in college.
I love it.
Yeah, it's too late to change it. Kamachbro on Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook. It's facebook.com/JamesYKamachoComedy. James Y, the letter Y. That's my middle initial. So James Y Kamacho Comedy. All of those have clips, jokes, and just content if you want to, you know, get lost. It's all just jokes and stuff there. So that's some entertainment. Oh, YouTube.com/JamesKamacho. More videos. And then if you want to come see me live, I believe if you're in New York this weekend, I'll be at – when is this coming out?
I'm going to put it out a week from now.
Okay. So I'll be at May 27th, May 28th. I'll be at the Comedy Shrine in Aurora, Illinois. I believe that's like 40 minutes outside Chicago, doing four shows there. And then on June 14th, Tuesday, I'll be doing Shamrock Comedy Club in Fort Lauderdale. And then July 16th, I'm doing my own show in LA.
Nice.
Comedy Boulevard. It's a small place. I want to try to see how many fans I got out in the world. So if you're interested, if you live in LA, come see me. Tickets and everything about me is at jamescamacho.com. And yeah, that's cool. That's the stuff. That's the stuff. Yeah.
I travel a lot, so I'll definitely try to find out if you're just in a space that I'm going to be in. I know I'm going to be in New York in October, so I'll try to
figure that out. You're based out of Houston, right?
I'm based out of Houston right now, yeah. But okay. I'll be in LA this weekend. I'm going to be in Atlanta in September for Dragon Con. I'll be in New York in October for New York Comic Con.
Nice.
Yeah, so I'm traveling all the cons this year as much as I can. Great. So yeah, but yeah, comedy is like I was telling you offline. That's where I get really excited about getting a chance to see people in person and stuff like that too. So hopefully I'll get to see you one day.
Yeah, hopefully.
But thank you again for joining me on the show, and for all my audience out there, don't forget to be your mixed ass selves.
Militantly Mix is a Main Hustle Media podcast, produced and hosted by me, Charmaine Fury. Music is by David Bogan, the One. You can follow us on social media on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Militantly Mixed. If you'd like to become a sponsor of Militantly Mixed, please go to patreon.com/militantlymixed for monthly sponsorship, or paypal.me/militantlymixed for a one-time only donation. And if you like what you hear on Militantly Mixed, please subscribe, rate, and review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget to be your mixed-ass self. Main Hustle Media. Turn your side hustle into your main hustle.